morning.
My name's Leanne. I'm a compulsive eater. Today we're doing our spring half marathon. I think this is the second time we've done it, and we're pretty much not messing with what we did last time. So hopefully this time will work too. We have four wonderful speakers today. We're going to have a keynote speaker, followed by a break, and followed by a panel. And I enjoy each and every one of these people's shares when I hear them at meetings. And my co-chair, Christina, does as well. And so we wanted to kind of mix it up and do something different. We have an ask it basket and a set of index cards and pens back in the back. So if you think about something relative to recovery, program tune-up, how to jumpstart your recovery, how to come up with a new angle, anything that you would like the panel to address, please feel free to take a card. They're on the back table. Take a pen if you don't have one, and drop your folded card anonymously if you like in the basket, and then the panel will address it in the second session, which will start at about 11. So without further ado, I think that's it on the administrative announcements. Coffee, water, tea is on the back table. We have planned a break. There's a literature table. Please check it out. There's a ton of stuff there, including things you don't always see. And if you're parked on the street with a meter, you might want to plan to go outside at the break and make sure your meter is not hungry. Meters are not hungry, meters too. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Chris, our first speaker.
Hi, everybody. My name is Chris. I'm a compulsive overeater. I know many, many, many of you. I'm really, really grateful to be here. I'm grateful that Leanne asked me to come. I was tempted. She had asked me quite a while ago, and I was kind of tempted. I had just done a little bit of service, and I was like, well, I'm doing a lot of service, so I don't need to say yes. And something just hit me that you really just, yeah, you don't say, somebody told me you don't say no to service. You just keep doing it, and that's one of the things. I got to just listen to what people tell me this program to do. It's really all I've done since the day I got here was listen to what you guys have told me is working for you, and that's what I'm doing, and it's slowly but surely working. So that's how I got here. I've been in program for 4 years, coming up next two months. Currently, my physical recovery is about 115 pounds. I forgot to bring pictures with me, but most of you have seen my pictures. And the physical recovery is truly, truly, truly the smallest part. And I know that may sound crazy or whatever. It really is. It is the smallest part. What's going on up here and in here is far and away so much more important than the physical part. The physical part is really trailing behind. When I started this abstinence, which started 14 or so months ago, it just, my relationship with God, when I truly came to surrender, and that'll come out in my as I begin to tell you parts of my journey, as my relationship with God got stronger and I became willing to really surrender my food is when everything really started to change for me. And I started to get honest. I first started to get honest with my food, and then honest in all different parts of my life that I didn't even realize I wasn't being honest in. So I'm going to just kind of tell you, today I'm really only, and I kind of did bullet items so I don't jump all over the place as some of you may know I can do. I know now after 4 years that I'm only really scratching the surface of both my honesty with myself and with the rest of the world, and also with finding my authentic life, which I heard somebody kind of use that quote of, you know, my authentic life. My authentic life is not wandering around this world at 320 pounds, grabbing for a piece of food every time I got uncomfortable. And I'm beginning to realize that that's not really who I am, and that's not why God put me on this earth. I don't know why He put me on this earth, but I know that's not why. And it's not to be afraid all the time, which is really who I was. And the more honest I become, the more I realize that's really who I was. I was just a very, very scared little boy for 41 years. Hiding in a 320-pound body. So that's a big change from where I was when I walked into where I am now, and I realize I'm only scratching the surface. So that's incredibly exciting to be in a place where, you know, I'm just finding out now what my life is really all about. I'm basically a dishonest person, just deep down. I never. If you had asked me what my character, you know, you go to a job interview and they say, "What's your, you know, what are your character traits that you bring to this job?" And I used to say, "I'm honest to a fault." And I used to truly believe that I was honest to a fault, but that's just not true, because I wasn't being honest with myself about what I was eating, why I was eating, what was really going on with me. It was all really about how everybody else felt about me. That's all my self-worth. Everything came from you guys, from people around me. And that has slowly changed. I'll go into how that changed as I go on. But over the last 4 years, that has changed, and I'm in a different place now as far as where my self-esteem and my self-worth come from. Because they used to come from the people around me, from my family, the people I worked with, and everybody else. That feedback that I was always looking for is where I got my, you know, how am I doing kind of thing. And now that comes from a very different place. And through the seeds of my recovery, the seeds that have been planted by you folks, I've come to a different place, and I get that self-esteem from a different place. And we're going to talk about where that is. So this program teaches me ways to be honest. I see it in people. I see when they share, and I hear shares that make me want to cry. I know that those people are being honest. And that's the first time in my life when I walked into an OA room and I heard people sharing their souls, and that really moved me. And I think it moved me because I was hearing pure honesty that I had never been willing to put out there. And that was very meaningful to me. So the program teaches me ways to be honest. My relationship with God allows me to be honest. It gives me the courage, because that's really what it was. It's courage to be honest. Can I go out on a limb and be honest about my food? What if I put this down? What's it going to mean? Where, you know, what comes next? And I wouldn't have the courage to do that if I didn't have the relationship I have today with my God, which I got through this program. When I came in, I had no relationship at all. I brought my big book because there's certain pieces. You know, we talk about the seeds of recovery, and the reason I like that title is because it was a very slow process over these 4 years, and I'm only at the beginning. It's been 4 years, I'm only at the beginning. It's been little seeds planted by things people have said to me. People in this room today have said things to me that I remember vividly, that are just somebody said, you know, one of my early meetings, they found out they had a big hole in them, a God-shaped hole in them, that they were trying to fill with food and alcohol and different things, and they would put it in, it would just fall out, so it didn't fit. And until they put God in there and it fit. And when they were saying that, I didn't really get it. I get it now, because now that God-shaped hole in me is filled, and it's staying filled, and I get that now. But that was a little seed, and as I went, every meeting I went to, I'd get a little bit more and a little bit more. The big book talks about that door opening. When I came in, I was an atheist. Thought I was an atheist, and was fairly angry at anybody who would come and tell me that there was a God that I would have to listen to and all that, and I would quickly get angry, and I didn't know why I would get angry. I should be ambivalent about it, right? If I didn't care whether you believe in a God or not, what do I care? But I would attack you in my head anyway and say how silly you were and ridiculous. And I came to understand that there was something behind that anger. It wasn't just that I didn't believe. It was that I had some kind of big problem going on with you know, my idea of a God. And through the seeds that were planted by people in this program, I slowly opened that door that the big book talks about, and was able to see that there's a possibility that there's a God, that there could be a God of my understanding. And that's where it kind of all began for me. But in the big book, talks about the great fact for us. And I just want to read a couple of little pieces as we go. All of you have heard most of this before, but a lot of it was just little pieces that I read it and was kind of hit by. The great fact is just this, and nothing less, that we have had a deep and effective spiritual experience, which has revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, toward our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. And the reason I read that is because the central fact of our lives is the absolute certainty. I have today absolute certainty that God is walking with me. He's standing right here next to me today. And it's absolute certainty. And I got that through this program. And it was, in the beginning, it was little, it was act as if, it was, It was little tiny steps, but I kept coming back and I kept seeing it working in people around me. And I would see it begin to work in me. I would surrender something small. I'd be willing just to, I'd just be willing enough to give up or do this. And I would, it would come, the relief would come over me. And I'd say, whoa, what was that? And I would be willing to do a little more and a little more and a little more. And that started with my, I'm going to talk to you about my story quickly because many of you have heard it. But from my first meeting on, I had little seeds. The first share from the first woman I ever heard talked about being emotionally immature, and that hit me. Wow, that's me. That's, as soon as she said it, I knew it was me. That was a seed. Okay, I'm a little more willing to say, let me listen to these people a little bit more. Somebody said, come back for five meetings, and I was willing to do that. I went to LBI later on or early on, and got a tremendous amount of input from you folks, and had a major spiritual experience on the beach, which many of you have heard. I met up with another person at a meeting when I was having trouble with the God thing, and they said, well, why do you have to have a vengeful God? I said, well, I was raised with a vengeful God. He's not going to like me. He's not going to accept me for who I am. And they said, well, come up with your own concept. What, you know, write a want ad to God. What would your God be if you could write your own want ad for God? That blew my mind. I'm not allowed to do that. Are you kidding me? Well, what do you give a shit? You don't believe anyway. Go ahead and do it. What do you got to lose? Okay, well, then, you know what? That's true. I'll do that. So I did that. And that was an amazing change of, okay, I'm gonna define my God as this for today. And that's how it started. And it has grown. But it started as that. And it worked. God came to me based on that. And the big book tells us that will happen if we just begin. He will show up. Other things, I went to a retreat that's not always related, and they had it was a meeting that just read the story of the prodigal son from the Bible, which I had never read, where the son leaves and one son stays on the farm, the other son leaves, and one works his whole life and the other one blows his inheritance and comes back, and the father bring out the fatted calf and bathe his feet and bring the son the robe, and the father had forgiven him, and the son who stayed said, how can you forgive him? And the father said, well, I forgave him before he ever left. And for me, that was God telling me, you know, God, I've been running around for the last 40 years doing whatever I want to do, breaking every law you ever wrote. And that was him telling me, hey, I forgive you before you ever left. I mean, that was, and that came in an email, that meeting. It came in an email, and I went that, it was down in Neptune. I said, oh, you know what, I'm going to try it. I don't even know what the prodigal son story is. Let me go and hear it. And it was amazing. I walked out of there, tears in my eyes, and it was one of those seeds, but it was big. It was just opening that door more and more. Somebody gave me a tape of a guy named Father Vincent, non-OA related. I'd never heard him before, and he just was pounding into my head that God loves me. His love is radical and unconditional, and that just kept hitting me. Radical and unconditional. It's radical and unconditional. He loves me no matter what. He built me the way I am. He loves me no matter what, and he's helping me. He's helping me on a daily basis to not pick up this food. That's proof for me. That was proof for me, and that just made the relationship deeper and deeper. I got my first sponsor when I came into the program, and I'm amazed, and I didn't see it until now, that the first 2 years of the program that I had that sponsor, she was an incredibly spiritual person, and very loving, and we spoke every day. And everything with her was, well, what do you think God would think of that? Where's God in this? What's going on with God? And for me, it was like, well, I'll see if I can get there, and I'll work my way up and slowly. But hearing that every day, it helped build a foundation of okay, well, it's working for her. I see it working for her. She's in a very, very good place. That my spirituality began to get deeper. And even my food was not great. I lost, when I first came in, I lost 40 pounds or something, and I was like, okay, that's good. I'll hang my hat on that. But I wasn't willing to give up a lot of different foods, and I wasn't really willing to get honest with my food. But I was building this spiritual base, this 2-year spiritual base that I now know I needed for the next step. And the next step for me was a 2-month binge where I put on the 40 pounds I had initially lost. And during that whole time, somebody said, you know, there's nothing worse than having a head full of program and a stomach full of food. And I absolutely know that to be true. I spent 2 months just binging my way through things and just lying to everybody else, mostly lying to myself that this is, you know, it's okay. And I knew it couldn't go on. And I ended up at a retreat down in Ocean City, surrounded by recovery, strong, amazing recovery, and I was still binging. I was taking off at night, and I said, and somebody said to me, "You need to get a sponsor." Oh, I lost my sponsor. I used that as my excuse to binge. Although my food was terrible months before that. I was just not being honest with my food. That's just all it was. I was not being honest with myself or my food. And at this retreat, I just knew that I couldn't go on. And I went back. I came back on a Sunday night. Monday night I went, and I found the skinniest person in OA I could find. That was a man. And I said, "I want your food plan. I don't care what it is. I don't even want you to tell me what it is. Just give it to me, and I surrender. I will do it." And he just laughed, and he said, "Okay." And the next day, he gave me his food plan, and I was terrified. I had no idea. I was literally surrendering my food. I had no idea what this guy ate. And he gave me his food plan. I said, "Okay, it's God, for today, I'm going to do this." And that was 14 months ago. And the food plan he gave me has been an absolute blessing in my life. It gives me everything I want and everything I need. And it's just amazing. And I know God put me exactly where I needed to be. And he brought me up to the point. I had to go through everything I went to. I heard somebody else say, every single cracker they ever put in their mouth, they had it. They had to put that cracker in their mouth to get to the point to where they were to recover. So I firmly believe that that's the case with me. So one of the things that my sponsor had me do was write a prayer to God. And this was 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago. And the prayer that I wrote was, "God, thank you for giving me the willingness to believe that you love me and that you want me to be happy and healthy. Please accept now my complete surrender of everything in my life that I can't control. Please guide me to know your path for my life so that I may follow it. And thank you for all the blessings in my life. Please help me see those blessings today." And that was just a prayer I wrote. I'm like, this is long. I'm never going to be able to remember this. And I had written it out. I typed it up and put it under my keyboard at work so nobody would see it. And she said, "I want you to say that every day." And I do. I say that. I say that now every day. And it's a mantra. It's kind of a mantra, but it's also, it keeps me connected. It keeps me there with him every morning. I say that. And that just starts my day. I mean, I have conversations with God all day long. And that's really the foundation of where my relief comes from. She also had me do a writing once. These are seeds. Again, all these little things I'm giving her are seeds. She had me do a writing of what would God say to you if he was sitting in front of you today? Who am I to, you know, in my old life, it was, who am I to presume God's going to talk directly to me? I'm just, you know, I did a writing on God talking to me, and it was amazing. I mean, it was an amazing experience. God loves me. He made me exactly as I am. He accepts me for exactly who I am. It was me building a relationship with a best friend. I mean, it's just so incredibly deep. It's hard to explain. But this was all necessary to get me to the point now where I was able to put down the food. The things that have happened since I put down the food are insane. I mean, I can't even describe what's been going on with me since my abstinence. Because now all my relief, my relief from food and alcohol and whatever, it's all gone now. So now I really got to deal with all the stuff that really goes on in Chris's head and his heart and his mind. And that's what I'm doing, and I'm doing it with his help. Everything I surrendered food-wise, I can surrender everything else. And he takes it, all my fears about everything, and we're going to get into that. One of the huge things, I know a lot of folks talk about the spiritual side of the program, the tools and all that. The tools are amazing. I need the tools. I use all of our tools all the time, and I need them desperately. But this is a spiritual program. The big book talks about, you know, in We Agnostics, which was a huge chapter for me in the beginning. It talks about what the big book is, and it says, well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself which will solve your problem. This is God solving my problem, not I'm going to do it, I'm going to somehow buckle down and he'll help me to white knuckle it through. No, he's going to, if I really, really give it to him, he's going to solve it. And that's my absolute proof, and that's where I get this absolute confidence that he's there and he's got my back. Because I would not be able to, I could probably do it for a month or 2 months or whatever, but 14 or 15 months of connecting with him every day, I mean, that's just an absolute blessing. Chapter to the Agnostics, I recommend every sponsee I talk to, even if they say they've got an amazing relationship with God, is to just read the chapter to the Agnostics. There's so much in there for me that just turned everything around. Talk about the great reality. Actually, I'll give you the whole piece. We found too that we had been worshipers, because I was like, you know, you're a fool if you're out there worshiping, you know, whatever. And I'm not going to go into the things I used to say, but there were some pretty mean things I used to say. We found too that we had been worshipers. What a state of mental goose flesh that used to bring on. Had we not variously worshipped people, sentiment, things, money, and ourselves? And then, with a better motive, had we not worshipfully beheld the sunset, the sea, or a flower? Who of us had not loved something or somebody? How much did these feelings, these loves, these worships have to do with pure reason? Little or nothing, we saw at last. Were not these things the tissue out of which our lives were constructed? Did not these feelings, after all, determine the course of our existence? It was impossible to say we had no capacity for faith or love or worship. In one form or another, we had been living by faith and little else. And I read that early on, and I said, absolutely. What was I doing with food? Was my faith not in food, that this was going to make me feel better? Was my faith not in how you felt about me? That was my faith. I worshipped pleasing you, making you tell me how great I was, living on my ego. I mean, that was my worship. So when I read that, that was like, okay, so now I'm not just talking about, now I've got to find the ability to worship some God. No, I've got to change what I'm worshiping to something that's incredibly unhealthy for me, to this possibility of something that's incredibly healthy for me. Or at least this thing I understand that loves me and wants me to be happy and healthy. That sounds a lot better than worshiping what's sitting in my refrigerator. Again, we agnostics. Actually, we were, and I'm not going to read, I only have two more little pieces to read, but actually we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or other it's there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup, just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. He was as much a fact as we were. We found the great reality deep down within us. In the last analysis, it is only there that he may be found. It was so with us, and it was so with me. And it gives me goosebumps, because that was my great reality, that it was there. I just needed to get past my anger and find out that, you know, why was I burying that so deeply? Why was I so angry at you folks who had found some connection to God? Why did that anger me so much? And I figured out why, and we're going to talk about that in a little while. And little seeds. Who are you to say there is no God? You know, as part of our process is losing our bravado and the fact that we know everything. You know, I don't know everything. I know actually very, very little. Who am I to say there is no God? Exactly. Who was I to say there was no God? I had no more proof than you had that there was. And as I began to realize that, it just opened that door. And what I alluded to earlier, the last line of We Agnostics is, when we drew near to him, he disclosed himself to us. And that's exactly what it was. I was staying as far away from him as I could, because I figured I was going to be smoted or whatever, you know. I was keeping my distance. And as I started to get closer, it got that feeling of warmth and of comfort just let me know that I was on the right path, moving in the right direction. So I hit my bottom. I got a new sponsor when I came back from that retreat, and I began to get honest with myself. Once I surrendered my food, everything else changed. My connection with God has been, I call it rock solid here. I've been relieved of the compulsion to compulsively overeat, or the desire to compulsively overeat today, and have been for the last 14 months. I can't describe it. I don't know how much of it is the food plan, how much of it is my surrender to God. I'm pretty sure it's my surrender to God that's allowing me to follow my food plan, because if I had to deal with, I mean, things have gone on in the last 14 months that have never happened in my life before, that are big, financially, all different things, and I'm okay. And I think, therefore, my food is okay, because I'm okay. And I have a very solid plan that I can lean on. My food plan is something I can lean against. It's a solid structure in my life. It's not a, I always looked at it as something that somebody's going to, you know, beat me over the head with. It's this thing I can lean on now. I know that that part of it is it's in my back pocket. It's written in a book. I've already committed what I'm going to eat today. I know what I'm going to eat today. Whatever else is going on, that I'll deal with. God and I can deal with that. The food, you know, it's already taken care of. Today, the greatest gift for me is my self-esteem. Because I'm no longer getting it from everyone else around me, I'm getting it from God, and I know He loves me and wants me to be happy and healthy. It changes everything. It changes my position. It changes the way I see everybody. It changes the way I treat everybody. It changes the way I raise my son. Because it's no longer about how can I impress you or show you how great I'm doing or how great I am. It's that I already am great. He already knows. He made me exactly as I am. There's not a thing in me that wasn't designed by Him. I'm exactly where I need to be. He knows what's going to happen to me tomorrow. He knows what's going to happen to me next week. I have absolute faith in that. And it's an amazing process. I just saw the face of somebody who planted one of those seeds in probably third week in program. I walked in, and it was the person who said, "Vengeful God, why do you have to have a vengeful God?" And that was, I remember saying to somebody a day later, that person moved a mountain out of my way, because that was the thing I couldn't see. And that idea that God doesn't hate me or want me to, you know, I'm not banished, that just moved a mountain out of my way. So I'm incredibly grateful to that person. I think they know who they are. So, peace of mind. I mean, that's just, I never had that my entire life. I never had peace of mind. And it's just, somebody mentioned, I have a sponsee from another state who talks about eating esteemable foods. And I'd never heard that before. And I'm like, esteemable foods, that's pretty amazing. That's interesting. And he said, well, now that I have this a different level of self-esteem for myself, I'm not going to put non-esteemable foods, inesteemable foods, however he says it, into my body. And that's kind of his test for what he's going to eat. Is it esteemable? Is it healthy for him? Is it going to work for his body? And I can get that now. I never got that before. I did a tremendous amount of abuse to my body, which I'm treating my body very differently now. As I said, it's a trailing kind of thing. As I follow my food plan, I follow my exercise plan, I follow our program. That's all following along. I mean, I'm not trying to build, you know, a new body. It's all just kind of happening, and that's the amazing part. That it's trailing along. It can't help but not. If I'm eating the right foods, you know, I feel now that I'm in the body that God designed for me. He did not design me to be a 320-pound guy. I was a 320-pound little boy. I was a little boy hiding in a 320-pound body, is what I was. Today, I'm grateful to say that I'm not. I'm 190 pounds, and I'm a man standing in a 190-pound body that I belong in, that was designed for me by God. So I wanted to read the promises from the big book, which for me, you know, every time I hear them, they kind of get me all worked up. But the idea that this, in action on page 83 of the big book, says the spiritual life is not a theory, we have to live it. And that, I mean, that sounds daunting. That sounded daunting to me, but the comfort I get from it when I say that prayer in the morning, my days go differently. When I talk to my sponsor and he goes, he knows, you know, are you connected with God today? He can hear my voice. He doesn't even have to ask me anymore because he knows I sound differently. I'm in an okay place. If I'm bouncing around, he's like, hey, did you meditate today? Just, you know, where are you at with that? And I'm like, oh yeah, I didn't have time. Whatever. It's so evident now that it's just, yeah, every day I've got to do those little things, and they're small habits for me. They were little seeds. Somebody said, when you go to the gym, take your headphones off. What do you do? I said, I don't have time to pray. You go to the gym, yeah. What are you doing at the gym? I sit on the, you know, I got on the machine. I get put the headsets on. Tomorrow, I'll leave the headsets in the locker. Talk to God. I started doing that. I haven't taken the headsets out of the locker since. That's the truth. In the car, what are you doing in the car? I listen to the radio. Okay, next time, don't turn on the radio. Talk to God. I don't know what's on the radio anymore because every time I get that, my hand reaching for my dial on my radio is my, did you talk to God today? Did you talk to God yet? Is there anything you need to let Him know about? Is there anything you want to ask Him? And I, 90% of the time, I pull my hand back and say, you know, hey, or I either say my mantra and talk to Him or tell Him what's on my mind. So the promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. I don't know if you're getting it, but I am amazed. I am absolutely amazed at the program and what it's capable of helping people with, or where it's capable of bringing us. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. I have that. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. And I'm getting there. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. And I know peace. I don't know it all the time. It's not there 24 hours a day. But I have known it. I know it. I feel it today. I feel it now. I'm at peace today. And there's more going on in my life this minute than has ever been going on before. And that's saying something, that I am in an amazing place. No matter how far down the scale we've gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. My work with sponsees is completely different now that I'm abstinent and I'm truly honest with my food. I can be truly honest with my sponsees. I could never be honest with them before. I'd say, oh, that's too bad. Oh, you know, okay, well, maybe try again. What? No, you know, okay, if I'm being honest, maybe it's this, maybe it's that, maybe you need to do this. I don't eat that. You know, I don't do that. Let me know how that works out for you. I can be straightforward and honest instead of just kind of dancing around because I wasn't holding up my end of the thing. Today I'm holding up my end of the bargain. I can be honest with them because that's what I needed from my sponsors. And that's important. The feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. That's true. It comes back, but it's, for the most part, my self-pity is gone. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. I'm working on that. Self-seeking will slip away. I'm also working on that. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Absolutely. My attitude and outlook on my life is changing drastically. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. That was a big one. My fear of people was huge. Standing up here and talking to people, I mean, it just was not. I would, if I could get up here and not throw up, it would be an amazing thing. Today, that's not the case, and that's just because I've spent so much time with you guys that I feel like your family. So it's as if I'm talking to my family, which is an amazing thing in and of itself. For a dishonest person, that's an amazing thing. We will intuitively know how to handle situations with you, which used to baffle us. That part is baffling, but true. Dealing with people calling me on the phone and saying things that I would never know how to handle before. What if so-and-so calls me and says they're about to binge? What am I going to say? What do I do? It happens all the time now. And it's, okay, this is what works for me. Did you talk to God? You know, whatever. It just comes. It just comes. And that intuitive dealing with it is amazing. Because I know intuitive means it's coming, you know, that way. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. And that's the name of the game. That's what this whole entire thing is about, right? That he's going to do it, or it's going to do it. Whatever your concept of God or your higher power, they will do it for you. Not they're going to help you along. They're going to try to get you through the whatever. They're going to do it for you. If I surrender it and I give it away, it's been taken care of every single time. And it's happened so many times now that I have a faith, an absolute faith, that whatever it is, I can hand it to him and it's going to be taken care of. Those are the promises. So now that the food is down, I've got about 5 more minutes, I think. Now that the food is down, this is really the first time since I was 15 years old that I have not been using a substance to get along in this world, to be accepted among everyone else. I was an alcoholic from 15 until 30, and last 10 years was a very active compulsive overeater. So that's a big deal for me. That, you know, I'm now 15 years old in certain respects, figuring out what's going on with Chris and all that. So I don't have an escape from my reality, and my reality is that I'm gay, which took me 41 years to come out and figure that out. I've known it my entire life, but was not willing to, never felt I would be accepted by anyone around me. And that's the scared little boy hiding in a 320-pound body. When I say that now, Of course. Holy shit. That's, yeah. Well, gee, what's going on with Chris? That's a big deal. And I'm only 2 weeks into figuring out, you know, what all this means for me and my family and all that. But I could never stand up here without him standing next to me and say that, because it was really all about, what do you guys think of me? Doesn't matter what you guys think of me. It's what I think of myself now. And that's the gift that I've been given. So, you know, how do I feel today knowing that? I feel amazing. I feel this amazing sense of relief, of peace, and that I'm okay. I mean, it's like everything else. It's like putting down the food. The relief of not doing it, of not lying anymore, of hiding, of not being dishonest, of beginning to live an authentic life. I can't call the last 30 years an authentic life. It's been a wonderful, in many cases, it's been a wonderful life and a great thing, but it hasn't been authentic because I haven't been honest. So now, it's. I won't say it's not terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying, but with God with me, it's absolutely doable, and it's an amazing place to be. And I wouldn't have been able to do it without OA. And all the people that gave me those little seeds that slowly brought me up to now what I believe is what I just told you. A year ago, I thought it was something else. So God knows what I'm going to come in a year and tell you. I don't know. But that's where I'm at, and I could not be here without you in this program. So I thank you all greatly, and that's it. Thanks. And I got to throw this in because I heard this at the meeting the other day. This is what I look like when I'm not being eaten alive by fears, negative thoughts, and anger. And that blew me away when the guy said that the way I looked before is what I looked like when I was being eaten alive by my fears. And that's an amazing thing, to not be eaten alive by my fears. Thank you.
My name is Christina, and I'm a grateful compulsive eater, and so grateful to be here this morning. How does it work for me today? Because that's what this morning is about. Like, how do we keep it going? How do we keep it fresh? I heard many things I could relate to in what Chris shared. But one of the things that happened for me, one of the life experiences that happened for me this week was I went into New York, and we had trouble going in, and coming home, we missed the 11:18 train by 1 minute. And I'm sitting there, and all of the people that live in Penn Station started to come out at night, and I thought, there are phone meetings that I'm never awake to hear. And I dialed in, and I'm listening to people who are evidently have a different time schedule than I have, and they're talking about how they're working their program, and it was really wonderful. I heard some great things. And then at midnight now, there's a new phone meeting that's called Bedtime Stories, and they were reading some of the stories from the Big Book, and one of the things that the girl chose to read that night was the Acceptance is the Answer. I don't know what they call the story today. It used to be called The Doctor, Drug Addict, Alcoholic. And I thought, if I were going to choose to say something to someone who was stuck on 34th Street watching the clock crawl to midnight, that might be a thing that I would say. And then she also started to talk about the principles of the program. And I've heard these before. One of my services for this morning, and Leanne didn't know about this, was to go, since I have a couple of sponsees from the phone meeting, and they've never seen me, I've never seen them, and I do step work with them. And since we do have an OA 12 and 12 now, when I first came in we didn't have it, we only had the AA book. I use the OA 12 and 12. There are so many beautiful things in this book And this is what it says about the principles of the program. In step one, we learned honesty as we admitted our personal powerlessness over food and the fact that without help, we could not successfully manage our own lives. In step two, we learned hope as we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Even in our loneliest hours, we can remind ourselves of the great truth that we are not alone. Even in the weakest moments, we will find the strength we need if we believe it is available to us and ask for it. In step three, we learned faith as we made the most important decision we had ever made, the decision to trust God as we understand God with our will and our lives. We will look to our higher power for guidance and strength as we face each decision. In steps four and five, we learned courage and integrity. As we face the truth about our defects of character, we are no longer ruled by a fear of admitting our mistakes. We can live more fully, having courage to face up to our mistakes and test our strengths in the challenges of life. In step six, we learn more about the necessity of willingness as we became entirely ready to let go of our shortcomings. In step seven, we began to understand the meaning of humility. We practice this principle today by continuing to let go of status seeking and of thoughts and actions by which we belittled ourselves and others, and to humbly trust God for the removal of our shortcomings. In step eight and nine, we looked at the damage we had done others and set about repairing it. Now we apply the same principles of self-discipline and love for others to all of our actions. Self-discipline makes us less likely to hurt other people and quicker to make amends when we do. Practicing the principle of love, we learn to accept others as they are, not as we would have them be. In step 10, we learn the value of perseverance. Practicing this principle in all our affairs today means we continue to do the things that have brought us healing, even though we sometimes wonder if we still need to. Perseverance brings us the reward of continuing personal recovery. In step 11, we learn the principle of spiritual awareness. We practice this principle by seeing our awareness of God's presence in all our affairs and by continuing to nurture our spiritual sensitivity through prayer and meditation. Step 12, the principle of service, which underlines OA's 12 steps, can now guide our actions both inside and outside of the program. Here we experience the great truth that when we let go of our need to control people and simply allow our higher power to serve others through us, we receive an abundance of joy and strength. And that is the truth for me. So I summarize this. They're pages 103 to 106 from the step book. You find a copy over there if you care to have it for yourself. That's what I had to share. Thanks for listening.
I want to remind everyone, we have an Ask It Basket. If you want an anonymous question to go to the panel is going to speak to us. And at the end of their pitch period, they'll take questions. And if you really are wondering how something works and you want a straight answer, I couldn't imagine asking anyone other than these people to get a straight answer. So I will pass this around.
My name is Susan. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi.
And I am really happy to be here. And my sponsor says that I have to say first that it's my anniversary and I have 13 years of HOW abstinence. She said if I didn't say it, she'd have to get up and say it. The idea of how my program grows. So I was thinking back actually to when I first came into the room and how my program was then. Because program really is like a continuum. You know, it grows and it has its ups and its downs over the life of being in recovery. And I've been in the rooms about, I guess, 15, 16 years. And when I first came in, you know, my motivation was getting off the weight. You know, that's where I was. And that led me to be willing to surrender, at that time, the food. You know, and not really a lot else. You know, initially it was the food and picking up a food program, doing just a few things, you know, maybe the first three steps, doing some reading, some writing, and then kind of putting that aside, going to maybe a meeting or so a week. And early on, that's where I was in program, and that's how it grew. And then I relapsed. For a period of time, about 18 months, I was out of the rooms, totally out of the rooms. And then I came back into the rooms. And, you know, I was more willing because I was beaten down. You know, I was in an enormous amount of pain coming into the room. I had just had, my daughter was 18 months old, and I knew from my behavior that I was out of control. You know, ignoring the child is a really good indication from higher power that I'm not on the right track. And so I came in back into the room, and I became more willing to do more things. And that's when I actually came into the How room. And so I became willing to go to more meetings and read more and to just do what I was asked to do. And that was the beginning, you know. And the program from that point continues to grow. It has this, you know, ebbs and flows. And I came in with a hunger for recovery. And it lasted. I guess if I was to think about the things that makes my program grow, one of the first things is the surrender to higher power. Somewhere along the line, early in program, I came to understand that I was not in control. I had that moment of light. It actually was with an incident that happened, and I was very frightened. And I got on the phone, and I called someone who I knew had a lot of spirituality. And he said to me, "Have you prayed?" And I said, "No. I worried an awful lot, you know. I didn't eat, but I was tied up inside, twisted inside." He said, "Have you prayed?" And that was the day when I did my first major surrender to my higher power. And I started praying. And that incident remained in my life for probably well over a year, almost into 2 years. And it never drove me to the food in all that time. And it never drove me as insane as it did before I surrendered. And that continues to be that surrender and the belief in higher power is the basis of why my program continues to move on. And I'm still in recovery. You know, I'm still in the room. I never knew until that time that it was more than just the food that, you know, or that higher power would help me with the food. Because, you know, I'm a self-control type person to the day. I don't lie about that. You know, I'm honest about that. But I do know that when I get to be too much in the control, if I surrender, then I am going to be at peace. You know, higher power keeps reminding me with incidents in my life that I can't do this by myself. You know, and because for today the food is down, I actually hear him talking to me. You know, that's the other piece, is the food. Another piece of it is the food, why I can be where I am right this moment, where I'm not totally insane. And that's because I put down foods that were a problem. You know, when I first came into the room, I was initially just sugar-free. And then I always still had that craving going on, that little pulse in the back of my head that said, "I'm here, remember me, I'm the food." You know, and that really drove me crazy. And then I came and I used to listen to people, actually my current sponsor, who's been with me a really long time, and I saw recovery in her. You know, my program grows because I see recovery in other people. And I want what they want. And I wanted what she wanted, was peace of mind. And so she told me about being in the How rooms and giving up flour and wheat. So I gave those up. And today, the food does not scream in my ears as it used to. I give it away, and then it's calm for the rest of the day. And that's truly a blessing, you know. I find that if I'm willing to do that on a daily basis, you know, surrender the food, give it up, then I can live life, you know. I can remember that I have a higher power. And so all those incidences in life that have come about, they're being turned over. Now, sometimes because I'm only human. Hate that, don't you? I forget that I have a higher power. I forget that I have tools that I can work in the program. And so higher power sends me the message, the twisting of the stomach, you know, the compulsion of the mind where I'm thinking on whatever it is that bothers me. And he sends me those messages. Because pain is one of the reasons why my program continues to grow. I'm in pain on occasion, you know. It's caused by me. I am the cause of that situation, you know, being in that pain. But when that pain comes, that discomfort comes, then it's like, I got a program. I have a sponsor who says to me, Sudge, right? Did you go to a meeting? Did you do what you're supposed to do? Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. And then the pain goes away. It doesn't mean that the incident in life that's bothering me goes away. It just means that the pain and the fear connected with it diminishes. And I can do it another day. And that's truly a blessing. Higher power plays the role in my recovery. And I hear higher power all over the place. I never used to hear him at all, you know. But I could go to a service. I could read something in a book. Of course, I can read all the literature. And I hear him. I hear him in other people. I go to a meeting and I hear a speaker. And it's like, he's talking to me. You know, he's talking to me. He's sending me a message. And this is the way things have evolved. I think that going to meetings keeps the program fresh. At meetings, I see recovery and I see the pain. And I need that reminder. Because, let's be honest, I could forget about this disease. You know, I could forget that I'm a compulsive overeater very easily. I could forget that I'm a compulsive person in a blink of an eye. Because this disease is always there. It's always waiting in the wings for me to fall, to leave recovery. You know, that's his job. His job is to make sure that I get back into the disease. My job, higher power, with his help, is to make sure that I stay in recovery. I have to stay in the rooms. You know, I have nothing if I leave the room. So I go to the rooms. And in the rooms, I have learned how to be a human being, how to face all the things in life that are thrown to me, you know, how to get through the day without eating compulsively, without being a nut. And that's the truth. I am a nut. I'm a regular lunatic. If I'm not doing recovery, if I'm not in recovery, if I'm not practicing my program, ask my family. They know. You know? So in the room, you know, I have learned how to work my program, how to go to functions, how to deal with the job, how to deal with the spouse, how to deal with the 14-year-old daughter. I've learned all this. Okay? People have heard. My daughter was 18 months when I came into the program. She has grown up with a parent. Or sorry, I should say 18 months since I've been basically in the house. Okay? She has grown up with a parent who is, most days, sane. That's a blessing. Because believe me, I was not sane before I came into the program. I mean, I know that. If I look back, it's crazy. So higher power, the rooms, surrender, those all work towards my program growing. There's a consistency to program. You know, what I did yesterday, I got to do today. You know, it's so easy for me to... two things. It's so easy for me to think that I have to do everything that's on the table. And that's my perfectionism. So when I wanted to do everything that was on the table, I did nothing. Did nothing. You know? Because I couldn't get it to be perfect. And so trying to do it so perfect, nothing got done. So now, it's a day at a time, and I have a firm belief that what I'm supposed to get done regarding program, life, etc., at the end of the day, is exactly what my higher power intended for me to do. So if for some reason I do not get to do one little thing regarding program or two little things, it's perfectly okay. Because he actually intended for me to learn from that lesson. Maybe I'll feel a little more pain that day. Maybe I won't. you know. Can't fight the food, not in life, you know. That is black and white. Life is gray, my favorite saying. Life is gray out there. It never goes the way that I think it's going to go. Definitely never goes the way I plan it's going to go. So it's necessary for that consistency in my life. And the acceptance that it's not perfect, that I'm never going to do anything perfect. The writing will not be perfect, but it will be exactly what I was supposed to say and write about. You know, I may plan to read this, but you know what? I needed to read this instead. And that's okay. I have to accept who I am. That's the other part about how I grow and how my program goes. Acceptance. Acceptance of all of you. Acceptance of me. And the fact that I know when I come into the room, I am accepted for exactly where I'm at right now today in my recovery and for who I am. I have a ton of defects. Don't tell anybody. Just a ton. But now my profession says they should be all taken care of. Do that fourth step, do the fifth step, whatever. Should be all done. Done. Gone. Forget it. I'm still controlling, still perfectionist, etc. Ask my husband. He'll tell you. Still the same. Hasn't changed. But the growth process allows me to understand that that's okay and that I can now continue to work my program. You know, I can continue to, I can do a 10th step. If I annoy someone today, I can do a 10th step. I can talk it through. I can call my sponsor, you know. Accept who I am, accept where I'm at. And I know that despite that, I will be okay. You know, if I practice this, I will be okay. So surrender, higher power, acceptance, consistency, those are all necessary for my program to grow. There is no magic one thing that allows for my program to grow. It's not like I do this one thing, I go this one place, and that's it. You know, that's the diet mentality that I used to have. You know, the idea of go on the diet, da da da, and at the end of that diet, I will be absolutely perfect, as I believe perfection should be. You know, that you know I will be social, I'll be beautiful, I'll be whatever. You know. And it never happened at any diet that I went on. That also didn't happen when I lost the weight here. It didn't happen because it's not about the diet. Okay? The food is what it is. Part of the symptom. And if I just stay here in the day, in this moment, and understand that it's not just about that, then I'm okay. You know, I know that, you know, people do a lot of different things, a lot of special meetings, retreats, et cetera, et cetera. I am really big on what I did yesterday, I got to do today. You know, I need to just do it today. I'm a really simple person in regards to programs. Basics. My sponsor knows that my food changes because the hum of what I say to her may go up or down, you know. Breakfast, basically the same, you know, MA, the same. Lunch and dinner, there's very little variety. I'm really boring when it comes to program, you know? And I'm really happy that I'm that way. Other parts of my life can be really exciting, okay? The program just got to be what it is. Day in, day out, I have to do it, you know? I am motivated by the recovery from the day before to do it another day. I am motivated by the fact that, you know, I didn't have an argument with this person the day before because I was not in the food. You know, I'm motivated to do it another day because I got up and my jeans fit. You know, I'm motivated because I'm not twisted inside. I just want it simple, you know. It keeps it clear for me. if it's simple and to the point. You know, I came into the rooms, and I came to Hal in particular, because they told me this is what I had to do. I wanted to stay in recovery. Do these things. I don't do them all perfectly. Heaven forbid. But I do them, and I do them to the best of my ability for that day. And one day at a time, I'm still in recovery. I am amazed that I'm at this point. Truly amazed. You know, I spent most of my life, you know, being active in this disease. So it amazes me that I can sit here and say, this is the number of years I've been in recovery. Okay, and I haven't eaten compulsively. But I'm only good up to today. Because tomorrow is a whole new day and a whole new set of circumstances. So it was this afternoon, by the way. So I've got to do what I did yesterday and do it today and so on. And it's just got to be, for me, really has to be simple. I am so blessed that I can look around this room and there are people here who've been working it with me all these years. You know? And it doesn't matter where they're at in their recovery. They're here. I am so truly motivated by the fact that people keep coming back. And it tells me I can keep coming back. Because if I leave the room, I am sunk. And I will be in enormous pain again. And I don't want that. Pain is a great motivator for me to keep working my program. You know? And it doesn't matter if it's my own pain or the pain I hear in someone else. I love you all in regard to that. You know? It's a gift. This recovery is a gift. And that's another motivation. I don't want to give up the gift. I don't want to give it back. You know? I am so blessed with what I've been given in my life. You know, and I can always say, it could be better here, it could be better there. But the truth of the matter is, I'm not eating compulsively. I'm not consumed by the food. The food is not my God today. And for so long, it was my God. For so long, that's all I thought about. If I was talking to you on the phone, I wanted to know, I was in the kitchen, let's be honest. Go to the cabinet. You know, I was at a party. I don't remember, I can tell you, when I went to parties prior to this, I don't remember at all who the people were. I remember what you served, what you had at the table. You know, I actually can communicate with people now. That's a miracle. You know, it's these things that keep me coming back, that keep me in recovery. And that, you know, that's truly the blessing today. It is, you know, spring again. And it's always a time of renewal, and just keep renewing the program one day at a time. Thank you for letting me share.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kathy, emotional overeater, carbohydrate addict.
Hi.
How are you? I've had a lot of things going around in my head about what I want to talk to you about today. I'll start off with a quick qualification. I've been in OA since April 1st of 2005, so I just recently celebrated 5 years. I have 4 years, 10 months of abstinence, and a 108-pound weight loss to date. And I want to talk to you about, you know, my personal growth through those 5 years. Some of you may remember me when I first came into the rooms as Jiggles. Then I shortened it to Jigs. And the you might not know the background of that, but the fact was that when I got to a place in my life before coming into the program, I had given up. And I say that I didn't care, but it really was that my history before program was I would lose the weight and I would gain it back and more. And then a couple of years would go by and I'd lose that weight and then I'd gain more. And I had gotten to a point in my life where I weighed almost 300 pounds and I'm not 6'3", I'm 5'2". And I just felt like I can't afford to lose the weight and gain it all back and more. So I just figured this is my lot in life. I'm going to be a heavy gal. So be it. Eat whatever I want and just get on with life. Don't make it such a big deal that, you know, whatever concoction I had in my head that I needed to lose weight, because my history was showing me that I could lose it, but I could never keep it off. And so I got to a place, you know, before program where I was motivated by a situation that happened to a coworker of mine to say, you know what, I have to appreciate the life that I'm given, and I have to do everything I can to, you know, show that appreciation to my higher power. And when I came to that realization, that was my aha moment. And I remembered hearing from my godmother, actually, some 20, 25 years earlier about OA. So I went on my computer and I went to the website, the OA.org, and I put in my zip code and I found the meeting. And at that, I remember that year, I wanted to go to the Rahway Friday night meeting because that fit into my schedule. Yeah, and I still do that, I have to be honest. I fit OA into my schedule instead of making my schedule fit into OA. But thank God it's been working, so that's where it needs to be for now. And so I found a meeting that would work for me, but I knew that in April of 2005 I had another commitment on Friday nights and I would not be able to go to that Rahway Friday night meeting. So in my head I said, I'm going to start going to that meeting on May 1st. In the meantime, for the month of April, I was able to go to the online chat rooms. And that's where I came up with the nickname Jiggles, because you had to come up with some sort of a online nickname. And that's what I picked. I tried a couple of different things that were already being used or what have you. So as God would have it, May 1st, I kept my commitment to myself and I guess to my higher power unbeknownst to me. And I did go to the Rahway Friday night meeting starting on May 1st. And at some point, someone in the room, you know, said to me, would you like to introduce yourself or something to that effect and, you know, tell us your first name or whatever. And all I could think of was, you know, well, I just spent a month, you know, with Jiggles. I'll just say Jiggles. And and that stuck. So I'm writing in the We Care book, Jiggles, you know. And for the longest time, I didn't even want to put my name in the We Care book. I didn't want you people to know what town I live in and what my phone number is. I don't know you people, you know. And I, as I look back on it, I knew later, maybe a couple of years later, that the other reason why I used Jiggles was, again, because I didn't want you guys to know my real name. You know, even my first name. No, that's not going to work for me. So over time, you know, that morphed, and this is part of my growth, to where one of our fellows had made a comment to me or a suggestion after a meeting that said, you know, you might want to think about, like, why are you still using the nickname, you know? And I did. I talked to my sponsor about it. I did a writing about it. And what I walked away with was, you know, the last thing I would want to do would be to offend someone with a name like Jiggles. And I didn't even really take it personally that I was, you know, jiggling with all my extra weight. That really wasn't even a concern of mine, but I didn't want to hurt someone else, you know, by using that name and making fun of anyone. That would just destroy me if I thought I was hurting someone like that. So at that point, I agreed to shorten it to Jigs. And then eventually, at some point, I said, okay, it's Kathy. You win. All right. And so that is a growth. You know, that's a growth process. When I look at the growth in my emotional recovery, that's been enormous, too. You know, I wouldn't get up in front of a room full of people. I wouldn't even share, you know, at a meeting. Never mind get up in front of a room full of people. But now I have done that, and I've spoken in New York. I've spoken at other meetings that we have in our intergroup and so forth. And I just hope that, you know, whatever comes out, I know is what God expects, you know, needs for me to say, and what hopefully you all need something in there that you need to hear. And the first person that needs to hear what I need to say is me. So it just kind of, you know, bounces right back at me. But, you know, the emotional growth came in doing the fourth step and giving away the fifth step, you know, to really take a fearless and searching moral inventory of myself, to understand really what's going on behind the food, because the food was just my coping mechanism. I had no other coping mechanism. So if I was sad and I didn't want to feel that feeling, I ate. If I was mad and I didn't want to feel that feeling, I ate. You know, if you start adding up all the different kinds of emotions that can go through a human being, it clearly I was just eating all the time. You know, to keep all those emotions suppressed and not have to deal with it because I didn't know how to deal with it. You know, and some things maybe were just too difficult to deal with. I mean, I was very much like a peacemaker. I didn't like to have arguments. I didn't like for people to fight, and that would make me very nervous, you know. So I've had a lot of emotional growth because I put down the food. I'm forced to deal with those emotions as each one comes up. And I know now how I can do that. I can improve my conscious contact with my higher power, who I choose to call God. You know, I can do a writing. I can pick up the phone. I can talk to my sponsor. I can go to a meeting. I can, do service. I mean, there's so many things that I can do now that I didn't realize were in my arsenal to help me deal with those feelings. And one of the best things that I've learned to do is when someone asks me my opinion or something like that, I'll say, well, to be honest with you, and then I tell them what I think. So, you know, it's not always easy. You know, if someone says, oh, how do you like my hair? Well, to be honest with you, I liked it better the other way. You know, or, I mean, it might seem like a small thing, but that would be the kind of thing that I would just say, that I would say, oh, I like it. It's very nice. Or it looks good on you. Or I don't know what I would say, but I wouldn't be thinking the same words that were coming out of my mouth. And I think when I have those things in sync, I'm being honest with myself. I'm being honest with the other person. And I don't have that conflict churning in me, you know, that, and so that works for me, you know. Spiritually, the spiritual growth, I came in with a faith in a higher power, but the conscious contact is much better. What I do need to work on are the gaps, like, I know better, but then a lot of times I let too much time go by before I actually reach out to my higher power for that help. And then afterward I realize, you mean I stuck with that uncomfortable feeling for a day, a week, 5 minutes longer than I needed to? Why? Why do I do that to myself? I realize it after the fact that I could have just turned it over to God immediately. And it would have been lifted, and I wouldn't have had any angst. So I have to work on that. But I do pray every day, and I pray for many people in the rooms as well in that process. I pray for anyone I've ever sponsored, which I haven't had that many sponsees, but they're all on my list, even if it was for a short period of time. It doesn't matter. And so when I think about, like, planting seeds, you know, I think about even the service that I've picked up along the way. You know, being a representative to Central Jersey Intergroup. You know, holding a position of corresponding secretary at that level. Being the acting treasurer for Central Jersey Intergroup for the last 6 months, approximately. You know, being a Region 7 rep. We just went to the Region 7 assembly down in Delaware. That's a 2-year commitment. The person who, you know, didn't share at meetings has now been accepted to speak at the World Service Convention in California in August. So, you know, it's talk about growth. You know, it's an amazing process, and I owe it to the program because it does work if I work it. I know that. There's still plenty that I need to do. One of the quotes in our program here says, a flower takes a season to grow. A tree takes long years to mature. Each growing thing, myself included, has a timetable for growth. Some of you may know that I've been dealing for the past couple of years with the possibility that I was sexually abused as a child. And while I have no recollection of any of that at all at this point, it seems like everybody else, you know, in my circle of people that are trying to help me work through this, basically know from the things that I'm saying and how I live my life that it is a fact. But I have no recollection. I have no memory of it yet, you know. But I, too, am starting to see from the work that I'm doing that it's almost like by process of elimination, there's no other explanation that, you know, that can come together to make sense out of where I am today in my life. Talk about growth. I mean, I thought I came into these rooms to lose weight. I didn't think I was going to realize, you know, at some point that I may have been abused as a child, you know, numerous times. So, you know, the best thing about that is that the fear is slowly dissipating to the point where, I mean, for at least a year, maybe more, I keep saying, I want to know. And I want to know so badly that I'm even thinking about, like, going to a hypnotist, you know, and just, let's just remember already. If there's something in there that I need to remember, let me remember and get it over with and get on with life. You know, it doesn't hold this big weight on me, so to speak. I just want to know, because I don't want to blame the wrong people, you know, if I'm thinking it was that one, or maybe it was that one, or could it have been a teacher, or was it a parent, or what, you know, what, you know. I either want to remember and just know and get on with my life. But then I realize that's taking back my will. That's not in God's time. Maybe it's a tree that's going to take years to mature. Maybe it's not a flower that needs just one season to grow. Maybe, you know, my flowers have been growing the past 2 years that I've been working on this issue. And, you know, I have to let it go in God's time, because if it comes to me before I'm ready, that's not good for me. And God knows when I'll be ready, if I'll ever be ready. But the work that I've done so far has been extremely helpful, and I'm grateful that I don't pick up the food over it or go to any other substance, because to me, you know, an addict is an addict. You know, X equals whatever. I could just as easily overshop. I could just as easily overwork. I could just as easily overexercise. I could just, or under, you know, stop, you know, any numerous things, you know, don't watch television or don't, you know, take a vacation or whatever. It's the extremes of it all. So what I'm grateful for is that I put down the substance. Thank God I haven't picked up any other substance that I'm conscious of anyway. And I'm just going to keep moving forward. And that's what growth really is to me. So thanks for letting me share.
Hi, I'm Marie. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Marie.
And I came into the How Room back in September of 1999. Just a little history. I came in at 213 pounds. I had gone through a very stressful year the year before. And I wasn't eating during the night, but I was eating pretty much throughout the entire day. I kept food at my desk at work. I kept it in my car. I was stopping on my way home from work. I was into the food all my waking hours. And through a friend of a friend, I was led into the How Room. And when I didn't really know that much about the program, and when I came in, I was looking for the physical recovery. That's what I came in for. I was already on high blood pressure medicine. The doctor told me I was headed towards type 2 diabetes. I was very, very stressed out on a number of issues. I knew I didn't like who I was at that point in my life. I really didn't. And so when I came into program and I came to know that it was a three-part disease. First of all, I didn't even know that it was a disease. Then I come to learn that it's a physical, emotional, and spiritual disease. And I always considered myself an emotional eater, but because I was raised in a faith, I never thought that I was lacking on the spiritual side. And that was the farthest thing from the truth. You know. And when I came into program and I started to hear about what was going to be required, I thought, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to do this. I can't do all this and work and do all the other things that I have to do. And so I start in my mind, I'm not going to take a sponsor. I got to try and do this myself first because I don't want to fail yet again. And so I went along until November, and I was seeing some physical recovery, but no recovery emotionally, really, no recovery spiritually. I was blessed that in one of the meetings in November, it was probably the week before Thanksgiving. A woman had come up to me after the meeting, and she said to me, do you have a sponsor? And I said, no, I don't have a sponsor. And at that point in time, there were not a lot of people that said they were available to sponsor. And she said, I'll sponsor you. And I was, like, so shocked, you know, like I wasn't ready for this. I didn't want to make that commitment yet. So I said, okay, and what do you want me to do? And so she told me, I want you to do a reading. I want you to do a writing. I want you to call me every day. I want you to write down your food. I want you to get to the meeting each week. So I said, okay. And I really didn't know how I was going to do all this. And I didn't want to tell my family that I was doing this. They didn't know I was in OA at that time. The commitment was I had to set aside the time to do this stuff. So I started getting up very early in the morning to do my reading and writing. And I started getting my food together at night for my breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You know, so my family soon had to come to know because I was going out to the meetings and all of this as to what was going on in my life. And it was really through the tools and starting to work on the steps that I found growth. I tried to get to a retreat every year, be it either an OA retreat or a church retreat, whatever. I feel I have to take that time away from every day, away from all those people that I love, and try and focus on myself mentally and spiritually. And I get great peace from that. And that has helped me an awful lot. I do think also that it's important to give service. I get a lot out of sponsoring. I do feel it's one way for me to be in conscious contact every day with other people that are doing the same thing that I'm doing, working this program to the best of their ability. I start my day with a phone call from a sponsee, usually ending my day with a call from a sponsee. That contact is very, very helpful for me. I've done a few fourth step inventories, and that's a continual process for me. You know, there's some stuff I'm willing to do today. There's some stuff I'm not willing to do yet. So that's a growth also for me. The getting to meetings is very, very important to me. I have to hear the recovery. I have to see the physical. That helps to keep me grounded. That helps keep me wanting to do this program on a day-to-day basis. Over this past year, it has been a very, very difficult year for me. I lost my husband. It'll be a year on Monday. And as I went through that time, I would have never come through that time in my life had I not been in program. I would be at 300 pounds right now had I not been in program. It was the seed that was planted through those years that helped me to get through that time. It was the discipline of preparing my food and taking it with me to the hospital when he was in the hospital. It was the I couldn't get to meetings during that time, but I could listen to meetings on the telephone, and I was able to do that. I still stayed in contact with people in the rooms through phone calls. I was able to do that. So I might not have been able to do the program 100% the way I would have liked to have done it, but I got through that time in my life, and I'm really, really grateful to have had the years in program to be able to get through that. And it's through all the love in the room also that helped to get me through it. People were making food for me, bringing it to me when I didn't have the time. People were praying for me, telling me they were praying for me. There was a lot of love in the rooms that helped to get me through that difficult time in my life. And, when I came into program, I wasn't willing to do all the things. And it's been through years that I've added things to my repertoire, the tools, the steps, the contact with people, it's a growth process. It doesn't happen overnight. It's a change in mindset and attitude that has to happen on a gradual basis. When I think about the benefits of the program, I came in, I was on blood pressure medicine. I'm off of blood pressure medicine today. My doctor was like over the edge about me getting type 2 diabetes because it runs in my family, and I was just so close to that. I'm not there today. I feel like my relationships with my family are in a much better place. The saying keeps coming into my mind, let go and let God. When I think of my children, and I can't control what goes on in their lives, you know. I feel pain in some ways because I know my oldest son in particular is overweight, and he has seen over the years how I work my program, and I would love for him to be in this program, but I can't force that program on him till he's ready to accept it. So, I continue to pray and hope that one day he may see the benefit of the program. Emotionally, I feel I'm in such a better place today. I've become stronger from the program. I've become more reliant on my higher power, who I never thought would free me from this disease. I never thought that God, would be interested in taking the food away from me. Just thought never entered my mind. And with the detachment, I've been able to detach from toxic situations. I've been able to let go. So I feel very, very blessed to have been exposed to program for these years, and I continue to want to grow in program. There was a quote that I found as I was on the internet looking at, change. What can I do about change? And it said, "We cannot change our past. We cannot change the fact that people act in a certain way. We cannot change the inevitable. The only thing we can do is play on the one string we have, and that is our attitude." So it's really in our attitude that we're going to bring about change. Are we willing to make that change today in our life? I hope that with spring and the seeds of recovery, we will be. So, and it's only together we can do it. I can't do it alone. Thanks for letting me share.
Question is, why is the weight getting so expensive? So expensive. Okay. Why is the weight getting so expensive? I'll answer. I don't know about the weight getting expensive, but I do know that I spent a lot of money in my disease. You know, I used to stop on the way home from, I used to work for my second job, and, you know, I stopped at one of those lovely little fast food places. Regularly. You know that when we went food shopping, there was a whole lot more in my basket than what was necessary. And, you know, I could see that today because we shop actually using the internet and it's a really simple list. Mm-hmm. And believe me, what comes into the house is a lot less than what used to come in the house before. So I don't know if, you know, if things are expensive or not. What I do know is I'm worth it. I am worth whatever I can put into that basket. No one says I have to put into the basket X amount of dollars. It's just a recommendation to begin with. And whatever I want to, you know, spend in terms of literature, et cetera. Or whatever it is that I need to spend in terms of food that's healthy for me. I think everyone makes that decision and what's best for them. So I know today that I'm worth it, that my program is worth it, that my recovery is worth it. And sometimes I can let other things go that I think I really want because I really need this.
Thank you, sir.
One thing I'd like to point out too is that a lot of this particular question gave an example of the $45 for the upcoming May 1st Labyrinth Silent Retreat going on in Neptune, and we do have scholarships for various events that are, you know, like LBI and I believe Winter Dreams. You know, which are 2 and 3 times more expensive than this event, this one-day event. I don't know off the top of my head if this Neptune event has such a scholarship-type fund, but I would, you know, make a suggestion that if in these economic times or for whatever reason your, you know, money is an issue for you, call the people that are on that contact list for whatever the event is that's going on in OA. And, you know, if they didn't think to have a scholarship established, they may reach out to other people on your behalf and see if someone would be is willing and able to, you know, give that service and make a contribution on your behalf. Because, you know, we all need this program or we wouldn't be here. So, you know, there are certain expenses that need to be covered, but we can all, it's another way that we can all work together and help each other. Thanks.
How do you keep the gratitude mentally, spiritually, and physically? Action. Does anyone want to start?
I'll speak to it. For me, I just feel that God has blessed me with good health. I want to do everything that I can at this point to keep my health in check. And if I wasn't grateful for my program, I know where I would be. I would be into the food. And today, I don't need to be there. So for me, I'm just very, very grateful that I want to continue to do what I'm doing today, tomorrow. Thanks for letting me share.
Something else I'd like to add is I give thanks. So I give, I'm grateful. You know, I can give thanks that for a lot of different things in my life, you know, including just maybe less traffic on the way here, and because I was driving the parkway. And if I remember to give thanks, then I am in a better place. You know, it's always been about me, and that's not gratitude. You know, so I do a lot of prayers throughout the day, and I give thanks in those prayers. Physically, you know, I keep to my food plan. And that really is one way of honoring my higher power. Because when I'm not on my food plan, if I don't do what my food plan is laid out for me, then, as I said earlier, the food becomes God. And there's no gratitude in food being God. And, you know, mentally, again, it comes down to a mindset. It is so easy for negative to come into my mind. You know, I can be, my job is very stressful recently. I could really spend my time there being negative. You know, or something with the husband or the child. I can really be negative. It doesn't serve me. Somewhere early in program, someone told me I had to change my mindset. Someone told me that when those negative thoughts come into my mind, I have to push them out. And I can replace those negative thoughts with gratitude. You know, I don't want to spend my time in the negative. So keeping the gratitude is active. You have to be active. It doesn't come naturally. You know, it may come more readily by continually doing it, but it's conscious action. The conscious actions eventually lead to more of the normal, you know, just kind of coming naturally. Thank you.
Thank you.
And what comes up for me with this question is, you know how we sometimes talk about making a living amends? When you can't make an amends to someone directly, you can, you know, live your life differently, and thereby, you know, you're honoring, you know, the change that you're committing to make. And I think for me, you know, a lot of my gratitude shows itself in that regard. You know, by having the peace within shows my emotional gratitude, actually having it and living with it. You know, to have the clarity of mind and not be in that food fog and be able to make decisions and, you know, and pray about them and you know, try to discern what is God's will for me. That's sort of a living gratitude. And physically, you know, in addition to obviously the weight loss, I also am appreciative and grateful for the things in my physical recovery that you might not, or I don't normally think of. For example, you know, getting my hair cut and colored, if truth be told. Going to the dentist on a regular basis, getting my eyes checked on a regular basis. By exercising, I have the bone density improvements, you know, that I don't have a problem with, but I'd rather not have a problem with. So why not, you know, put that exercise money in the bank and for the future? Again, with exercise, just the whole respiratory system, the circulatory system, you know, things that I don't see on the outside, but it's still part of my physical recovery and it's still part of my way to live my gratitude. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. One more here. Ooh, it's a long one with many parts. Let me see. Have tried this before and run away. The more I say I am not going to eat or drink, the more I do eat and drink. Know I need help. Used to exercise. Can't find my way. Do not know how to get started, but felt pulled here today. What can you suggest? What actions to take? How to stop taking food to bed? I guess it's tame the angry voices. I mean, the thing that's coming to my mind first and foremost would be conscious contact with my higher power always seems to work for me. You know, just asking God in all sincerity to help me. You know, in step three we say, turn my will and my life over to the care of God, as I understand Him. So if I'm turning over my life, well, that's everything. That includes everything. It includes the exercise, it includes the food, it includes, you know, the angry voices. Turn it all over. Easier said than done, you know, but that's why we're practicing the principles in all our affairs, and that's why we're in recovery, you know, and we're, you know, and I'm working toward that, you know. I mean, for me, you know, when I get up in the morning before the sun comes up and I'm riding my bicycle outdoors before work, doesn't get much more spiritual than watching the sunrise and hearing the birds chirp and, you know, all right, the squirrels I could do without, but, you know, you get my point. So even, again, you know, just living life and seeing God all around me and within me and outside of me and through all of you, and that's what kind of you know, keeps it together for me.
I think it takes great courage to come into the room. There's such a fear of failure, such a fear of I won't be able to do what they tell me I have to do. And I know that that definitely played a role when I first came into the room. Definitely played a role when I made a decision to go to, or led to the How Room. And as a compulsive person, you want to do it all. You know? And failure at doing even one part of it is that domino effect that I did nothing. So my suggestion is show up. Just come. Because when I came and just showed up, I heard what I needed to hear for that day. And eventually, I found someone to work with, and they led me through the steps and started very honestly with the food program, because let's be honest, that's why I came. I want to lose weight. Started the food program. And the mantra is, it is one day at a time. Mm-hmm. It is 1 minute at a time. And if I had to think that this is what I was going to do for the next 5 minutes, 5 months, 5 years, I would not be here. Mm-hmm. You know? But if I stay in the day, then all those things that I fear I won't be able to do eventually just line up and they get done. It's a miracle. But if I don't show up, I can't hear the miracle. As they always say, stay for the miracle. The higher power has a plan for me. I did not rely upon higher power when I first came into the rooms. I know that higher power came into the rooms. But did I believe it on day one? Absolutely not. But I knew if I showed up, and I loved what I heard in the rooms, and it kept me coming back. And I wanted what you had, and you had, and you had. And then I was willing to do it myself. So, show up. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing.
I guess the only thing I would add to this is, you know, certainly, when I shared, I said I came into this room and I was afraid of all of the things that I was going to have to be required to do. And I think the only thing I can say to this person is, you don't have to do it all today. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do it all today. You just have to start. You have to be willing to start and be willing to surrender to your higher power. And I think, for me, I came into this room because I was desperate. I had tried all the other stuff on the outside, and the other stuff didn't work. And I think when you're desperate, you know that this is the last straw. It's in the OA room. And there is so much benefit to be gained by starting and trying. There'll be no benefit to be gained if you stay out. So that's all I have to share.
My name is Phyllis. I've been in program and abstinence for 8 years. When I came into program, I did not believe in God. And 3 months later, on a train to California, reading the Step Book and the Big Book, I could believe in God a lot. And God is what has kept me through the tragedies in my life in the last 6 months. And I'm still abstinent. When I first started program, I kept my abstinence 1 hour at a time, not one day. I couldn't go a day, and I did that for months. And I'm back to that. I'm back to that because I am. Sometimes the depression gets me and I don't want to eat. And then I have to force myself to eat. And then other times I just want to compulsively overeat. And I know I can't do that. I just can't. So for me, it's a way, and 1 hour at a time. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm the compulsive overeater.
Hi, Andy.
I'm very nervous, and well, anyway, you don't know why when I get done. When I started to know how to come up front, I was like, oh, crap. But you know what? I heard some things today about God's love, God's acceptance, honesty, and self-acceptance that I think are actually going to really change my program. I heard something in this room upstairs a while ago, and I've been holding a resentment about it. The statement was that gay people have a spiritual malady. And that statement was actually a misinterpretation of what the Big Book said. There was a story in there about a gay person who had a spiritual malady because of their addiction. The addiction was the spiritual malady. And when the person was able, with God's help, to give up the addiction and was able to live honestly about themselves, that was the change. That was the thing that changed their life, and they no longer had the spiritual malady. They were still gay. And that statement made me feel like I couldn't be honest, and I've held a resentment about it for a lot of years, and I'm going to get honest today. I have a gay son, and he's a spiritual man, and God loves him. God's love is not just for straight people, it's for all people. And you know what? It's okay. It's okay. And I don't, you know, it's nothing for me to be embarrassed about or ashamed about. And I you know, when I heard the honesty and the sharing, I said, you know, it's time for me to be honest as well. And that's it. Thanks for listening.
Hi, Debbie H., compulsive overeater.
Hi, Debbie.
And I just want to thank everybody that put on the morning marathon. It's really been great for me. I'm so happy I came. And thanks so much for sharing, each one of you sharing on the panel. I really got so much out of it. And congratulations on your anniversaries. That's wonderful. And it's just a joy and a celebration to be here, a celebration of the program. And the one ask a question about desperation, I just want to say that desperation is a good thing, definitely a good thing. It's how we take our first step. That's how I took my first step, was that desperation. And when I thought it was how terrible it was, now in hindsight I look at how wonderful it was, you know, how it changed my life, that desperation. And definitely I had to, you know, keep coming, thank God. And and if it doesn't work for me this time, I have one assurance. My misery will be refunded to me. The food will do it again. I have that assurance, you know, that I'll get that desperation back and have a chance at that first step again. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for sharing.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tara Lee, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Tara Lee.
Hi, everyone. I'm so grateful to be here, and I'm so grateful to be able and willing to listen. Really, this has evolved recently, as I never have before. the big book talks about, I think the way it's put is a psychic change. I think that's the Dr. Silkwood's words. And I can only speak for today. But for today, that's what I see in my life. And it came all at once after three plus years of struggling and fighting and more time in relapse than not, and the pain of relapse after coming into a program like this, because you never have quite that luxury of denial again. Mm. And I recognize, particularly in that last item in Ask It Basket, I certainly hear and feel that pain and that desperation and that feeling that it will never happen. And I relate to it, and I know I'm not alone, and I know the writer of that note is not alone. I have come to the realization that there was one thing in particular that I was not doing. There were lots of things I wasn't doing, big things, including not putting down food, but probably the biggest thing I wasn't doing is I wasn't asking God or anybody else for help. And I finally had the idea and asked for help, and immediately certain things started to shift. And then when I began asking for help, even through fellows and my sponsor, contacting my sponsor about things that I never would have been willing to say, I can't do this alone. And now I find that I need all the help I can get. If that means I have to be at 2 meetings, 5 meetings, 14 meetings a week, if that's the amount of help I need that help, because I will not have peace. Never mind physical health and longevity. I will not have peace unless I do everything that I need to do. I don't know if I'll do it when I walk out this door. I do know that I am blessed in this moment to know it and to be willing to do it in this moment. I start the hour to hour. I relate to that, and there have been many times when it's been minute to minute. I had in my hands last night something ready, and I managed by the grace of God and the willingness to have been asking for help to say I want to close this day with abstinence more than I want this thing. And that's a rarity for me. And I just really believe that it takes what it takes. If it takes 3 years or 5 years, if it takes doing the same things over and over again or trying something different, it can and will happen for anyone who keeps coming back. I believe that with all of my heart. And there's a part in How It Works, it actually sticks in my craw sometimes, because it says that there are some unfortunates who, because if they are unable to be honest, will not enjoy recovery. And I like to share this as often as I can. In later years, Phil W. came to view that differently. And he came to believe, because he lived a living program and continued to learn after that big book was written, came to believe that anyone can recover. And I believe that with all my heart, and I if I can give no other message, my message always is keep coming back. Thank you.
Thank you. I would just like to thank the wonderful speakers, everyone for coming. I feel that I got so much out of this. Thank you so much. And thanks to you for supporting you.
Amen.